It's time for The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cyclists, trails, travel, advocacy, the bike industry, and much, much more. You can subscribe to our weekly podcast at OutspokenCyclist.com or through your favorite podcatching app to listen anytime. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. Thanks for tuning in today. Not too long ago, we spoke with Paul Tolmay, the communications director for the Cascade Bicycle Club, headquartered out in Seattle. I was so taken with some of the programs this 10,000-member club is developing and implementing that when Paul contacted me about the Pedaling Relief Project, which is about to reach a huge milestone, as well as to update me on some of their legislative initiatives, I thought I'd share his news with you. Our conversation sort of began before I did the formal intro, so I figured we'd just fade into it, because he's always raring to go. Then, after a break, we'll speak with the Washington Post's Gretchen Reynolds. Gretchen writes the Your Move column for the Post on Wednesdays. Today, we're going to talk about what sometimes happens with athletes who exercise at intense levels over long periods of time. In her May 17th article, When Too Much Exercise is Bad for Your Heart, Gretchen explains what a new study has found. So it's off to Seattle to catch up with Paul Tolmay and the Cascade Bicycle Club. So I think we're going to be the new destination place for people fleeing fires, earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes, mudslides. You know, I mean, it's a pretty quiet part of the country in Northeast Ohio. We get the occasional tornado, but not very seldom. That's about it.
My mom, who lives in New Hampshire in the same house, the big old farmhouse that I grew up, says the same thing about, living in the woods in New Hampshire.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's her sales pitch for her boys to come back home.
How many are there? You and your brother? Is there more?
I've got one brother who still lives in New Hampshire. So he's there keeping an eye on mom, who's 88 now and still
nice. Gardening
every day. Yeah. So we'll be back home in New England for a family reunion in July after STP.
Oh, right, right. You better get that ride out of the way first.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on again. I appreciate it. Cascade does so many good things that it's hard to even get them into a discussion. But
well, so one of the reasons I keep coming back is because I think you're such a good example to other clubs, other advocacy groups, other people trying to do similar things. So, you know, you're so successful. Even the successes that are not successes, you go back and work on them again. And so you also don't give up, which I think a lot of people give up.
Yeah, well, you know, being 50-plus-year-old organization, you know, we have infrastructure in place as an organization and some leverage at, you know, in the State House and in around Washington. So that works. But, you know, like upcoming, I'm going to be working. So we have like free bike parking, the thing that we've created with the Seattle Sounders. They're the Major League Soccer team. And this is just an example of one of the new programs where we're just trying to engage with the community, folks who might still not know too much about Cascade. Oh, I can park my bike for free at the Sounders game and pedal there instead of, you know, getting in the traffic congestion and getting in and out of games is a big hassle. So Sounders bike parking, this pedaling relief project I mentioned.
Yeah, well, let's talk about all this. Let me first welcome you back to the show. I'm going to keep in what we've already started talking about. We're talking with Paul Tolmay, and we talked to him not too long ago, but so many cool things are happening with the Cascade Cycling Club out in the state of Washington. Paul is the communications manager and spokesperson for the Cascade Bicycling Club in Seattle, which is seeing some nice weather as we are here in Northeast Ohio. So let me ask a question about soccer, because I'm not a soccer person. Actually, I'm a golf person. I don't play, but I am a rabid golf fan. How big is soccer that you have traffic congestion? Is it big out there?
Well, we have the Seattle Sounders here. It's one of the Major League Soccer, the MLS professional teams. And so, yeah, we have a huge fan base here in Seattle. And so the Sounders played down at Lumen Field in downtown Seattle. And as you can imagine, anybody's been to a professional baseball game or football game, you know, driving in and driving out, you get stuck in that traffic congestion. So Cascade Bicycle Club, looking for a solution, has partnered with the Sounders to create free bike parking where we staff many home games through the season, where you can pedal your bike, you know, maybe even take mass transit, take the light rail and with your bike, and then pedal the last mile to the stadium. We'll watch your bike, you park it for free, and you pick it up after the game. And so it's just one of the many ways where we're trying to get people to ride a bike instead of drive.
Well, so what's really cool is you probably can't park your car for free downtown.
Correct.
So now you've got not only better transportation, less environmental impact, but it doesn't even cost more and you're healthier. I don't see a lose-lose anywhere. I see a win-win 100%, you know, taking your bike down to the game. That's really, really cool. I want to catch up on some of the other stuff we've talked about. When we spoke in March, there was legislation on the table. And as we said, not everything that you work on gets through legislation. Some of it fails. Tell me what happened to which programs, because you did have some wins.
We did. Yeah. So just a little bit of an explainer. We have sort of two sides to Cascade Bicycle Club. Cascade Bicycle Club, everybody knows we put on the STP and other big events and Sounders Parking. And then we have our 501c4, which is our lobbying and political endorsements arm. It's called Washington Bikes. This is kind of a legacy of when these two organizations merged some years back. And Washington Bikes is our organization that works in Olympia in the State House. So yeah, we pushed an ambitious traffic safety agenda to really try to combat this rise in traffic violence. Essentially, people walking and biking and rolling, being hit, injured, and sometimes killed by cars. One of our primary bill we were trying to get passed, and it unfortunately did not, was our restricting right turns on red. There are a lot of crosswalks across America, here in Seattle and statewide, where people must walk or ride their bike through a crosswalk at a busy intersection. And crosswalks should be safe places, but they're one of the most dangerous places you can be, because you have a lot of drivers, instead of stopping at the red light, looking both directions, and then proceeding with a right turn, simply treat that red light as just like a yield sign or a merge, right? They don't even stop completely. And so they're looking for other big cars that, you know, they don't want to run into them, but they're not looking for pedestrians or bikes. So that bill didn't get through, but we will return it. However, we did have some good victories. That Washington Bikes supported the electric bike rebate program. So the legislature, thanks to the leadership of Senator Shoemake, who really pushed this bill through, we got $8 million funded to create $300 and $1,200 rebates, income, the higher rebate amount based on income level, as well as a funding for what we're calling kind of an e-bike lending library. So organizations could create a pool of e-bikes that they could either loan or rent out to individuals who maybe can't afford or aren't ready to buy an e-bike to test them. So that's another interesting program. So electric bikes, we're fully supportive of them insofar as they can replace a lot of car trips, bike commutes, et cetera. So that was a great victory.
Let me ask a question about this $8 million. So this is over and above or it may or may not matter if there's a federal program. This is actually for Washington.
Yeah, and it's for purchases in, you know, brick and mortar shops. So this is going to also support local businesses. Those bike shops, which were essential businesses during the pandemic, are going to benefit from this. So this funding will not only support getting more people onto bikes, but also it'll be a bit of an economic boost for a lot of these bike shops, you know, which are not, you don't get rich quick.
No, there's a real good saying in the bike business. If you want to make $1 million, you need to start with $2 million. So where is this $8 million coming from? Does this come from a general fund, or are they raising, how are they coming up with this money?
That's a question I would probably have to check with my policy. I know that a lot of the funding for bike and pedestrian infrastructure is coming out of a new carbon fee and program that Washington implemented last year. So there will be certain types of businesses who will, it's sort of a cap and trade type of a system. If you wanted to discuss this further in depth, I'd have to read up a little bit more.
Yeah, we'll do that at another time. But let me reintroduce you. We're speaking with Paul Tolmay. You know, I really enjoy talking with him because his organization, Cascade Bicycle Club, is doing so many cool things on so many levels, from, you know, getting people who've never ridden a bike to be able to ride, all the way to getting money funded for rebates on e-bikes and the lending thing. That's such a cool idea, that there'll be a pool of bikes that people can try to find out, A, if they like it, B, how they're going to be able to afford it, and C, it becomes transportation for people who cannot afford transportation. I just think it's awesome.
As do we. Yeah, so Cascade Bicycle Club, we're kind of known for our big events and rides, like the Kaiser Permanente Seattle to Portland, presented by Alaska Airlines. Shout out to the sponsors.
Absolutely.
To put this event on. But those big rides we put on, like STP and coming up RSVP, which is our ride to Vancouver from Seattle in late August, another one I would flag for any of your audience that is looking for a beautiful ride in the Northwest. Those are both two-day events and a great way to explore the Northwest. However, those are all fundraising events for our advocacy work and some of our education work. So anybody who signs up for a ride can feel good knowing that they're supporting bike advocacy, you know, our efforts to get more bike lanes, more laws for safe cycling, et cetera, passed in Washington. One of the great programs that I haven't had a chance to mention yet is our partnership with food banks, which is called the Pedaling Relief Project. And this is another place anybody who supports Cascade is supporting initiatives like this. We partner with 7 food banks around Seattle, and we rescue food from grocery stores using cargo bikes and pedal bikes with burly bike trailers. We have a big fleet of bike trailers, and there are these rescues and deliveries Wednesdays through Sundays. I participated in one just last Sunday, which was a food rescue. And it's such a great ride. I spoke with a lot of the volunteers who are all ages, from university students who really want to help fight food insecurity, to retirees who like to ride bikes but want to ride with a purpose. And so that Pedaling Relief Project, which began during the pandemic when we had a spike in demand, people were losing jobs, food banks experienced a crisis of need because they were also losing their volunteer workers who couldn't come into the food bank because of COVID concerns. One of my colleagues, who I really love, Maxwell Burton, started on a very small scale this bike deliveries, coordinating with one food bank that has now grown citywide. And we're about to pass a milestone, started in 2020, now midway through 2023. We're approaching 1 million pounds of food and other essential goods delivered by bike. So that's a crazy good program, and it's a way to engage a new type of person who doesn't think of themselves as a bicyclist. You know, that's a term I try to not use it so much anymore. And so folks who might not do STP but still love to ride a bike can sign up for one of these pedaling relief rides or grocery store rescues. There are a number of grocery stores that partner with us. And so we supply the trailers that you can hitch to the back of any bike. If you have an e-bike, even better. And they're 2 to 3 hours. And this one I did last Sunday had about a dozen folks participating. And we went to two markets in the Ballard and Fremont neighborhoods. and then delivered those to a pop-up food bank down in South Seattle, where the food's distributed to individuals who need it. And it's such a heartwarming, good feeling to get exercise while pedaling to help your neighbors in need. And so I encourage folks in the Seattle area to check out the Pedaling Relief Project.
One project also that caught my attention is a project between Cascade and the Western Washington Honda dealers. How did you get Honda involved? I mean, we're talking cars.
Right. Yes. So that was a sponsorship. They chose to sponsor Cascade Bicycle Club. And, you know, we need funding to carry out many of these great programs, such as Pedaling Relief Projects, such as Sounders Bike Parking and more. And so as part of the deal, we have access to Honda vehicles, which are really important for many of our programs, but specifically our school bike curriculum. It's called Let's Go. Cascade contracts with the city to provide the bicycling skills and safety program for the public school system. So elementary through middle school, something like 20,000 kids in the Seattle school system receive this education, as well as in the small city of Edmonds, just to the north. And that program, we need to deliver fleets of bikes to schools. And so we're using a Honda that was donated by the Western Washington Honda dealers to pull trailers of bikes. It's a great program that touches a lot of people, and teaching bike skills to children is such a valuable societal benefit, because hopefully many of them will hopefully ride bikes for the rest of their lives. And the great news, Diane, thanks to the legislature, is in future years, that program is going to be expanding statewide. We're now in the early stages of that statewide expansion of, it's called the school-based bicycle education program. And it's going to be incredible. I believe it's probably the largest statewide program in the country. I've done a little research. I haven't found any that are larger, but in any case, bike education coming to school districts across Washington in future years. Anyway, back to Honda. It was also a way for us to share with their audience of Honda drivers and buyers our Share the Road campaign. So on this issue, we spoke about traffic safety. We have a Share the Road campaign. Washington State, like many other states, you could buy a license plate called Share the Road.
I have one.
Yeah, you have one. Yes, great. Thank you, Diane. And Cascade Bicycle Club receives a percentage of that revenue whenever someone pays a little bit extra for a Share the Road plate. And so we're excited to share that, encourage new Honda buyers to get a Share the Road plate when they buy their new Honda. So it was an initiative that directly benefited Cascade in our programming, as well as communicating with that large audience of Western Washington Honda dealers, of which there are many dealers in that association. And so we're really grateful for them for seeing the value in bicycling and in supporting Cascade Bicycle Club.
So I have two final things I want to talk about. They both pertain to, one pertains specifically to May and Bike Month, and the other is to talk about the big rides coming up. But one of the things, and I imagine you do it not just Bike to Work Day, did you have a Bike to School Day?
Well, for all of May, we've been partnering with a few other organizations to create bike buses.
Oh, you have? Okay, so explain that. I know what they are, but maybe some of my listeners don't.
Yeah, essentially it's like a caravan of bikes where, riding by yourself with your child to school might be scary, but if you can get together with 30 other parents and, a bunch of bikes, and then led by experienced folks taking the safest routes to school, it's a fun way to introduce people who might otherwise be nervous about riding their child to school on a bike. So, all through May, that program has been underway. Bike to Work Day last Friday, or we call it Bike Everywhere Day here.
Okay, right.
We had celebration stations, as we call them, around the city and around the Puget Sound. where you can stop in for free coffee and donuts, pastries, and bike swag. And we partnered with Ortlieb, who gave out socks and showed off a lot of their cool panniers and saddlebags. And so it was a hugely successful day. Great way to reward people who are already bike commuting, and for folks who are new to it, encourage them to come to a celebration station and just socialize with for a few minutes and have a free pastry and coffee and meet some of the other community members who are bicycling, and hopefully be encouraged to take it up as a habit.
So I think ours, there were a couple of stations. One was specifically in our downtown public square. And I know there was also donuts and coffee and all of that. But I remember one year they gave away blinky lights, which was kind of cool. So to encourage people, you know, the safety part of it. But yeah, I would love to see these expanded, not just May. I'd love to see have a bike to work day every month would be nice. You know, that would be really cool. Last two things I want to talk about are STP and RSVP. Let's give people the dates. And you're not filled on those rides yet, are you? Or are you?
Not yet. And I encourage your audience to check these out at cascade.org. Yeah, so the Kaiser Permanente Seattle Portland, presented by Alaska Airlines, July 15 and 16. This is kind of the iconic Pacific Northwest bike ride. 206 miles over 2 days. Most people do it in 2 days. Some do it in one. But it's fully supported with food and rest stops the entire way, mechanical support, and a big camping area that we partnered with some schools at the halfway point. So there's lots of space to camp. That's July 15 and 16. And in August 26, 27, we have our ride from Seattle to Vancouver and party, supported by Western Washington Honda dealers. So thank you to Honda for supporting that ride. Yeah, that's August 26 and 27. 2 days again. We pedal the first day from the Seattle area up to Bellingham, which is a gorgeous college town right up near the British Columbia border. And there will be food tents and party at the halfway point. Folks get up the next day and pedal the rest of the way to Vancouver. And we do baggage support. So we'll transport your baggage in both of those rides, STP and RSVP, as we call it, so that you can really just enjoy the ride, carry snacks and water, and enjoy the scenery along the way, and hopefully make a bunch of new friends.
Right. They're parties on wheels.
Parties on wheels. We put on rides, not races. Some people will mistakenly call them races, but all of our rides are, we hope to make them as inclusive as possible, as supportive as possible, so that you don't have to be a triathlete or an Uber, you know, athlete to get out and ride one of these events. You go at your own pace and know that you're going to be fully supported along the way with food and water and hydration and a very supportive fellow riders. So, yeah, I encourage your listeners to check those events out. And as I mentioned previously, they support the other good works that Cascade Bicycle Club does.
I think our STP for sure is one of those bucket list rides. You know, if you've done Ragbri, just keep on heading west and get out to Seattle.
44th year for STP.
Yeah, it's an iconic ride. I do know that. Well, Paul, thank you so much once again for spending time talking with me about Cascade and all the amazing things that you guys do. I'm always impressed. To find out more, you can go to cascade.org. And look it up, sign up for STP or RSVP. And if you're an advocate, if you are a cycling advocate or are thinking about cycling advocacy, take a look at what Cascade is doing, because I think you can bring some things back to your organization. And I assume that they could contact you for more information.
Absolutely. We're happy to talk to bike advocacy organizations anywhere and share our knowledge. As a matter of fact, this pedaling relief project, Food Rescues and Deliveries, we're hoping to expand that statewide in future years and provide sort of a toolkit for other organizations, bike clubs, to be able to host similar rides, which you know, benefit their community. So yeah, check out cascade.org and read the blog. Click the news link. I will be posting a story about this 1 million pounds of goods delivered pretty much after we read up, we get off the air. So,
well, thank you so much and have a wonderful summer. I'll talk to you again.
Thank you, Diane. Always a pleasure.
My thanks to Paul for joining me on the show again today. I always take away such great information from the work Cascade is doing. You can find out more about the club, read the blog, sign up for any of their events, or learn about their many and varied programs at cascade.org. Let's take a break, and when we return, we'll speak with award-winning journalist Gretchen Reynolds. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Jenks. We see ads for AFib on TV all the time, but according to the CDC, it is estimated that 12.1 million people in the United States will have AFib by 2030. In 2019, AFib was mentioned on 183,321 death certificates and was the underlying cause of death in 26,535 of those deaths. People of European descent are more likely to have AFib than African Americans. Because the number of AFib cases increases with age and women generally live longer than men, more women than men experience AFib. But it turns out that athletes, especially endurance athletes, seem to be even more vulnerable to this irregular heart rhythm. In her May 17th article, When Too Much Exercise is Bad for Your Heart, author Gretchen Reynolds talks about AFib and a new study of ultra-endurance athletes who showed an unusually high incidence of AFib. Gretchen's here to break it down for us. Hello, Gretchen. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for being my guest today. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks very much for having me.
It's my pleasure. I'm always excited to talk to award-winning journalists. On May 17th, the Washington Post, which is your paper, published an article titled When Too Much Exercise is Bad for Your Heart. And that immediately caught my attention because I have spoken with people who are endurance athletes and who have problems like what we're going to talk about today. So we will post Gretchen's article on our website after our conversation. I'm pretty sure everyone listening has just stopped pedaling on their trainers, because a lot of people listen on Monday mornings when after we post a new interview. So we've talked about AFib. As I said, your reporting is on a study and you have some recommendations. Define AFib for us. Let's start with that.
Yes, we should probably start with that. It stands for atrial fibrillation. And the atria are the top chambers of the heart. They feed the blood down to the ventricles. And with atrial fibrillation, and I'm not a doctor, so bear all that in mind. But atrial fibrillation is basically a dysregulation of the rhythm of the heart and of the atria. And it usually results in a very fast heartbeat, at least occasionally. Sometimes the rhythm is different. But basically, AFib means that the atrium is not working quite right. And the issue with that, there's several. For one thing, it can feel terrible. But when the atria is disordered, it's not pumping blood correctly. And what can happen is that some of the blood pools between beats or even gets caught in little crevices that are in the heart muscle. And as a result, it can cause blood clots. And those blood clots can travel to the brain and cause a stroke. And that's why atrial fibrillation is associated with a pretty significantly increased risk of stroke. And that's the real concern.
Do we know, are there statistics that tell us what the percentage of people who have strokes is and how many might be attributed to AFib?
There are all kinds of different statistics depending on who you're looking at. I mean, stroke in and of itself is more common than some of us might think, and it happens in athletes. Having AFib is definitely a risk factor for having a stroke, and that's really why those of us who are athletes, and I certainly include myself in this, this is why we need to pay attention to this research about the potential relationship between lots of training, pretty serious long-term endurance training, and an increased risk for AFib, which is what I was writing about.
Right. And I want to get to the study, but I want to ask you this, which it didn't occur to me till we started talking. I wear a Fitbit. It gives me lots of heart rate information feedback. Do you think some of the new wearable technology is helping to define this or to point it out?
Almost certainly, yes. A couple of the people that I spoke, the researchers that I spoke to for the story that I wrote, did mention that, A, it's almost certainly really helpful to have a watch or activity tracker that does show your heart rate, because then you can track if there are these spikes, which most people would probably feel, but not always. But the researchers also said, what that means is you are also seeing more diagnosed cases. So it looks like the incidence is rising a lot of AFib, and it may just be that people are wearing watches and activity trackers and catching it who wouldn't have before. So, I mean, all in all, they all agreed it's a wonderful thing to have this technology, the wearables, that do allow you to watch what's happening with your heart. And if you see changes that you can't explain, go talk to someone.
Right, exactly. Let me reintroduce you. Then we're going to talk about this study that you're talking about in your article. We are speaking with Gretchen Reynolds. She is a writer for the Washington Post. Her column is called Your Move. You can follow her at the Washington Post, and we'll get other ways of follow her. I imagine there's some social media options. And the title of the article is When Too Much Exercise is Bad for Your Heart. You know, we think of exercise as being good for your heart, and for the most part, that's probably true. So let's talk about the study. What was it? And who was involved in it?
Well, I do want to start by reiterating what you just said, that the main message of everything that I do and of everyone I talked with is that exercise, by and large, is extremely good for your heart. It reduces the risk of AFib for most people, especially if your exercise is relatively moderate. What this study was looking at was whether long-term, very serious athletes had an increased risk. And they did that by putting out a survey, a very careful academic survey that went out through bike clubs, running clubs, triathlons, some gyms, and that recruited only people who were serious competitive athletes and endurance athletes, that cyclists, swimmers, triathletes, runners. And what they did was ask them about very specific information of how many years they'd been training, how hard they'd been training, how many races they'd done, how well they placed in the races, and then their medical history. Had they been diagnosed with AFib? Had they ever experienced a stroke? And they got more than 1,000 people from around the world to respond to this, which is a very good response rate. And although we can get into this a little more, this was also a very self-selected group of people who were probably interested in their heart health. So what they found was that about 20% of these almost 1,000 people in fact had been diagnosed with AFib, which is a much higher percentage than you'd find in just the regular population of people. 20% of all people do not have AFib. 20% of these athletes did, with the caveat that these were probably people who responded to the study because they had AFib and wanted to be part of it. So it's probably that number is probably too high. But it does suggest, and the people, mostly men, but not exclusively men, those who had spent the most years competing at the highest levels and the most hours training every week were at the highest risk. So again, what we are talking about and what the scientists found was really heavy, long-term training. So that's years of riding your bike or training for a triathlon, 10, 12 hours a week. That's really serious training, a very small group of people doing that. But what they did find was, again, 20% of these people did develop AFib, and some of them had a stroke. So you were not completely protected against either this heart problem or the stroke by being an athlete.
Well, you already answered one of the questions I was going to ask, and that is it more prone to men than women, which is what we think. Is it possible that men train at higher levels than women? That might be one answer. Although I know a lot of women are pretty intense when they train, especially for triathlons. I don't see it as much in cycling for women as I do. Men do interval training all the time. And I know that is really heavy duty stuff. So yeah, it is more men than women is how it looks on the study.
Well, that's also very controversial because right now these studies are mostly looking at people in their 50s and 60s, which is when you typically, sometimes in the 40s, but typically you're at least 50 before you're diagnosed with AFib. There have not been as many women in that age group who've trained for 20 years. So all of the researchers I talked to said, right now it looks like men are more vulnerable to this than women, but there haven't been nearly as many women to study. So hopefully in the future, as more and more of us do keep training into our 50s and 60s, we can learn more about whether women are protected against this somehow or not. I have a friend who's a woman and she developed AFib. So it's not as if it's impossible, but we definitely don't know the incidence yet.
All right. Well, here's the big question. What are some of the recommendations to keep you exercising and not getting to the point where you're overdoing it at these ages or for that length of time and developing AFib? Are there recommendations out of the study?
It's really hard to say is that the problem because scientists don't know yet why some people develop it and others don't. And there may be genetics, which we can't do anything about. It may be how many intervals you've done. But right now, none of the researchers I talked with said, back off of your training, because it's not clear that backing off your training will necessarily protect you. If you love to compete. What they did say was pay attention to your body and your heart. And most athletes do, but if you have a watch, if you have a tracker, are you seeing sudden spikes in your heart rate? Do you feel palpitations? Are you suddenly finding it really hard to complete a workout that you could complete, you know, a month ago? Are you short of breath? I mean, none of those are necessarily AFib, and they could be other issues with your heart. They could be a cold. But if you're seeing things that going on in your body that you can't quite explain, you really should talk to your doctor and possibly a cardiologist. And between you, especially if you go see a sports cardiologist, most of them are very familiar with AFib. It can be treated. You can continue to be an athlete, but you do need to speak with your doctor, create a plan, understand what your heart may start doing or not, and just be proactive about your health, which most athletes are anyway.
Very cool. Let me reintroduce you. And then I want to talk about a different article that I just happened to find while I was doing some of the research for this conversation. We're speaking with Gretchen Reynolds. She writes the Your Move column for the Washington Post. We'll tell you how to follow her at the end of our conversation. So on April 13th, you wrote a piece about exercising outdoors. And I thought it was really interesting. Tell me some of the highlights of exercising outdoors and what you found in that article.
Well, there's a whole area of research called green exercise research. It looking at how being outside in green spaces amplifies the benefits of exercise. I mean, you're going to get exercise benefits if you do it in a blank cardboard box, if you do it in a concrete gym, if you're on the treadmill or on your bike trainer, you're going to get tremendous benefits for your body, obviously, and also your brain. It's very good for mental health. It's very good for your ability to concentrate. But what the science shows is if you take that same workout outside, you really increase those benefits, especially for mental health. It looks like if you go for a walk outside, it does so much more for your ability to be calm, your ability to feel happy, than if you do that same walk inside. And it does look like it needs to be green exercise. It's not just getting outside and walking in the concrete jungle. The science shows you do need to be in an area with trees, flowers, actual nature. And it looks like what that does is what the scientists call provide soft fascination, which is a term I just loved. Our brains are busy all the time, that, you know, we're constantly thinking. And what the researchers believe happens when we are outside and moving is that we become involved in the nature. We see it, we're interested in it, but we don't have to really intellectually process it. So it actually allows our attention to reset, to get a little quieter. And when we go back to the busy, you know, indoor office life, we can handle it better. That our brains are more ready for the demands that we're going to place on them later. So the soft fascination of exercise in nature seems to be really important for our ability to think and for our mental health, for our moods, for happiness. And again, you get that on top of the benefits of the exercise itself. So if you have a choice, it definitely does look like take your workout outside if you possibly can.
As long as it's not icy and snowing and it's really too cold, I would totally agree. This has just been a wonderful conversation. I really appreciate you taking time talking with me today. We've been speaking with Gretchen Reynolds. She writes the Your Move column for the Washington Post. And I will be following her. Gretchen, please tell my listeners how they can follow your work also.
Well, the column appears every Wednesday at the Washington Post. And you can follow me on Twitter, although I have to admit I'm not very active these days. But it is at Gretchen Reynolds without an S, because there was already a Gretchen Reynolds.
Of course there was.
Yeah. And that's the main place. I'm on Instagram, but I can't even remember my handle, which shows you how often I post.
Yeah, I get it. I've moved a lot of my stuff from Twitter to Instagram, but you have to have a picture.
Right.
And so when this goes up, it'll have your picture. And then I can say, go listen to this interview. Well, thank you again so much. I appreciate you talking with me. I really appreciate the information. I know my listeners are going to like it. I hope you have a great day.
You too. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care. My thanks to Gretchen for joining me today. We have links to both the AFib and green exercise articles at OutspokenCyclist.com. And you can read her column, Your Move, each Wednesday in the Washington Post. My thanks to you for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed the show. You can find show notes, photos, and links at OutspokenCyclist.com and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Subscribe to the podcast on your favorite app so you never miss an episode. Until next time, please stay safe, stay well, and remember, there is always time for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We welcome your thoughts and contributions on our Facebook page, or visit OutspokenCyclist.com to leave a comment on any episode. We will be back next week with new guests, topics, conversations, and news from the world of cycling. Subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app and you'll never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.